This is Hearing Voices from NPR with AIDS Diaries. South Africa has been hit hardest with HIV/AIDS. 5 million people are infected. One of them, Thembe Ngubane, at 19 years old, carried a recorder in 2005 for the project Radio Diaries.
Testing, 1, 2, 1, 2. Test, test, test. Okay. Hi, this is Thembe. It's time for my prayer. Every morning when I wake up, I'll run off to my drawer, take out the mirror, and look at myself. Then I start to do my prayer. I say it every day, every time when I'm feeling angry. Like when you are angry at someone, you always have that thing in you that you need to tell that someone what you feel. I say, hello HIV. You trespasser, you are in my body, you have to obey the rules. You have to respect me, and if you don't hurt me, I won't hurt you. You mind your business, I'll mind mine. Then I'll give you your ticket when your time comes. I never thought I would ever worry about HIV and AIDS. It was the last thing in my mind. Okay, right now I'm at the doctor's office. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm feeling great.
You're feeling great? No
yeah.
Problem.
I'm fine, no problem.
Okay, let me just take your weight.
Okay. I've known that I'm HIV positive for 2 years. I'm considered stage 4. When you're on stage 4, you are not HIV positive anymore. They say you've got AIDS.
I see your CD4 count. You know what it is, huh? CD4 is an indication of how good your immune system still is.
Yes, I know.
It was 167 Seven. In March of this year.
Yes.
Yes. You know it's going down all the time.
Yes. Yeah?
And when you are below 200, it's dangerous for you.
Yes, I know. I was very surprised to know that my CD4 count was below 200, was 167, and at the same time, I've never been sick.
You are very much at risk of getting sick. It's a bit like swimming in a lake where you have crocodiles, yeah? You can swim sometime without getting bitten, but if you stay swimming a long time, at some point, you're gonna get bitten.
Okay, I understand.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. Thank you. Okay, I'm gonna tell you how I was infected. I had this boyfriend and then we broke up. I went my own way, he went his way. A year later, I heard that he had died. When I went to his house, his family was gathered there. I said, what happened? Was he shot or was he stabbed? So his sister told me, no, he was sick. I said, what? She said, he was very thin and he couldn't talk. Then all of a sudden, he just lost a lot of weight. Then I asked her, what if he had AIDS? She said, I don't know. That's when I started to get very worried. So I decided, okay, I'm going to go for a test. I went to the clinic. They bring all the equipment in front of me and just prick me on my finger. Then 10 minutes passes by. The counselor came back. They say, we need to have another one. He started to do another one and another one. They did all my 5 fingers. Then I started to worry because I thought, hey, why is he testing me like 5 times? Then he said, okay, now it's time for your report. He said, you know, when your blood looks like this, it means you have the virus. You are HIV positive. And you've been HIV positive for many years. I just stared at him. He said, okay. And now I'm at home. Oh, hi. So, this is Melikai, my boyfriend. Say hi.
Hi.
I was telling him how cute you look. My boyfriend's name is Melikai. We live together. We've been together for 2 years. Okay, play. And Melikai is obsessed with music.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome, Melikai. Let's dance. We are very close. Everyone knows we are very close. If they see Melikai, they see me. We are always together. He met me and I met him, and that was it. I remember when I find out about my HIV status, it was very painful to tell him. I thought, hey, what if I've also infected him? Now I've ruined my life and I've ruined everybody's life. Melikai.
Yeah.
Do you ever wish that maybe you have never met me?
No. Just because the only thing is that I love you. You know that.
Yes. But I'm the one who's infected you.
I don't want to blame you. You didn't chase after AIDS. You didn't go on top of the mountain and said you want to have AIDS, you know? And I don't want you to blame yourself. Just be strong.
Okay. For me, what scares me most is that I think we are not going to die at the same time if we die.
I know that you think if you die first, I'm going to have another girlfriend.
No, I'm not thinking you must die first. No, I'm not thinking you must die first. Really, I'm thinking that if one of us dies, you, how would it be? At least if we were going to die there at the same time.
Give me a kiss for that.
Hi Timbi, my name is Dr. Abrams. How are you doing?
I have these pains here and my neck and head.
I'm just going to take your blood, alright? I'm just going to examine you now for any other signs of any other opportunistic infections. I'm just opening your mouth, I'm looking for thrush on the tongue, which isn't. Okay, and now I'm just going to have a listen to a chest. So you can hear it's more dull on the right hand side. Fluid in the lungs, covering the whole lung. Okay, you can sit on the bed. You are very thin, very short of breath. You need to be on antiretrovirals. You do need the ARVs to bring up your CD4 count and to bring down the virus. Alright.
Testing 1, 2, 1, 2. This is Tembi again. It's been a few months since I've been talking to you. The reason that I didn't record was that I didn't want to hear my sick voice. I didn't want people to see me like this and hear me like this. I couldn't even look in the mirror. The way that I looked, my face was sort of becoming bones, you see, and dark. And my eyes were kind of big. And I was shaking. I couldn't walk. All the things that were happening, I thought they would never happen to me. My boyfriend Melikai, he was very, very worried. He would plead me to go to the hospital. I just wouldn't want to go. I was afraid of the way people were going to look at me. People would stare. They start to point, look at her, look at her. She's so small. I just wanted to sit home and hide myself in the bed. Then my mother showed up. When she came into the house,
she kind of stared at me. Because the last time she saw me, I was fine. And now I'm thin like this. Then she said, "Tana mountain unje," and that means, "My child, why are you like this?" I just look into her eyes. She was very afraid. And I just look at her and I said, "I don't think I'm going to live for long." And she said, "Okay, don't worry, I'm going to take you to the hospital." Then she put me on her back and she took me to the hospital. Oh, hold on a minute. This is Tembi again. That was my cell phone alarm. It does that every day at 9 a.m. and at 9 p.m. When it rings, I take my ARVs. I'm very lucky to be in a community that supplies ARVs because in some areas they are not available. The ARV stands for antiretrovirals. Antiretrovirals are medicines that help to fight the virus. You must take them the rest of your life.
Okay. I swallow them. That's it. I wish I didn't have to drink these. It's been about a month now since I've started ARVs. In 2 weeks' time, I could walk and breathe and do things. So when I look back, I think it was some kind of a miracle or something. Let me see outside what the day looks like. I'll show you around my neighborhood. So it's a bright, beautiful day. People are all out. They're starting to wash their laundries, putting them on the line. Music is coming from every house. I just love it today. My neighborhood is very crowded. Mostly people live in shacks. There's this shack behind the shack, or there's this house behind the house, there's a shack behind the shack, there's another shack. A lot of people. Molo. And now here's my friend. Okay, she's going to the shop. See you later. Bye bye. Noxola is one of my friends. She lives nearby. She was diagnosed HIV positive in 1999. She has two daughters. There are a lot of us here in Kalisha who are sick, but the people don't disclose because they are scared of discrimination. People do talk, do point, people do whisper. And sometimes if they hear that someone is HIV, they burn your house down so that you can't stay there anymore. In the past, our parents were suffering from apartheid. They wanted to be free. And now it is the same with HIV and AIDS. This is the new struggle. Knock, knock. Right now, I'm at my mother's house. Hello, everyone. This is my mother.
Hello.
Hi, Honorable. I'm back.
Well, I have to tell you something now that will come to you as a surprise. My boyfriend Milka and I have a baby. This is Onwabo. She's almost 1 year old. She's got many toys. And this one is her favorite. It makes a sound like this. I know what people might be thinking, but Onwabo is fine. We gave a drug called AZT when I was in labor. She's been tested and she's HIV negative. Isn't that true, Onwabo? She says, yes, it's true. I didn't want people to know that I was pregnant. What I thought was I didn't have the right to have a baby. I thought maybe if I had a baby, maybe in hospital they are going to arrest me. Sometimes I think maybe it was not a right thing to do. But I just wanted it so bad.
Do you understand why I wanted to have a baby?
My daughter, I did understand. But can you explain to me?
Okay, I felt like I needed to have something that I can live for. Something that I can call my own.
Oh, you didn't care you have me.
No, you are old. And you are not mine, you are your mother's baby. So I wanted my own.
The way that I care about Onwabo and the way that I love her, it makes me think about how my mother feels about me.
My mother has clothed me, fed me, raised me, and now, at the end of the day, she must also bury me. I was supposed to be the one that was going to look after her. She had put me on her back when I was young. Now that I'm old, she must also again put me on her back. That is not right. My parents don't live together. They live in different townships, but not far. My father is kind of an old-fashioned person. It's like to him, I'm this child. He really adores me.
But my dad doesn't know that I have AIDS. I haven't told him. I felt like I could tell the whole world, but not him. And now I feel like I've been hiding so long, I just have to tell him. Because he's my father. I just want him to hear it from me.
Okay.
Here we are at my dad's house, and it's raining a lot.
Okay.
My father's shack, the roof is made with tins. You can hear because the rain sounds so loud.
He
has just asked me whether I'm going back to school. Yes, I'm going to go to school next year.
Okay.
Okay. Dad?
Yes.
Before, in the past, there was no epidemic like AIDS, and now people are suffering from it. So how do you and the other old people think about it?
Okay. It's hard for us, we old people. You grow the kid up now. Tomorrow, the kid is dead. You see, that's why I get angry of this disease. There was no problem before, but now it becomes a big problem. Jesus.
Okay, I have news that I have to tell you. I was trying to tell you, but I just couldn't, But I don't want you to feel like I'm hiding some things from you.
Okay, my kid.
Okay, 3 years ago, I was discovered HIV positive. I have AIDS.
Oh, my.
But everything is under control. I am on ARVs. My health is fine. I'm going to the good doctors. So I don't need you to worry about anything. Yeah, don't need you to worry. Just for you to know. Because it has been kept a secret for a long time.
Okay.
I felt like I have disappointed you. I thought that it was going to break you into pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You see? How do you feel?
I feel bad, you see. But what can I do? I have to accept it. What can I do? Okay, my kid.
Okay. My mother always said that you must be tough. Even if you are feeling hurt inside, you must not always be jelly belly. Cry, 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 cry.
telling my dad was one of the hardest things that I've ever done. But I didn't want to cry. He must see just a tough face. I just wanted him to see that I was not afraid and that I'm going to be okay. Right now I'm making a bottle for Onwabo. This is her sucking the bottle. Okay, now it's almost 10:30 at night and we are preparing ourselves for his sleep. Good night. Where is the other blanket? She's already asleep. Milka is already in bed. As always, I'm the last person to sleep. Oh, I'm just imagining what this world would be like without me. I'm not scared of dying, but I'm scared of not being here, leaving my baby behind. I just want enough time to see her grow a little bigger.
You are awake now.
AIDS is not going to bring me down. I am the one who's got hands and feet and mind, and it's only something that is inside my blood. So it will try to rule maybe inside, but outside I'll be the boss. I want to study further, I want to have a great job. There are a lot of things that I want to get done. I'm just going on with my life. I'm just going on with my life. Okay. Kubi, 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 bo, siafa, 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 siafo, siafa. Ingulas no ma besi kalelas o chabalala siafa siafo siafa.
Tembe Engubane's AIDS Diary was produced by Joe Richman of RadioDiaries.org with editors Deborah George and Ben Shapiro. More of Tembe's story is at AIDSDiary.org. Coming up, a Seattle mother and daughter both test positive. African children keep their parents' memory alive in a box. And a poet travels his native Jamaica talking about HIV/AIDS. This is Hearing Voices with AIDS Diaries.
From NPR, this is Hearing Voices.
You are hearing voices from NPR with AIDS Diaries. December 1st is AIDS Awareness Day. In the arts community, it has another name.
A day without art. A day without art.
Big black sheets over all the sculptures and over the paintings.
Well, a day without art is a way of grieving.
I saw black over Matisse, and I saw black over Rodin, and it hit me so hard that that is the perfect symbol for AIDS awareness.
The only thing I knew about A Day Without Art had to do with galleries covering paintings. And the first thing I thought about was the Catholic Church. After Christ was crucified, 3 days before Easter, they covered all the figures of the saints that are in the church with purple velvet. The image is taken away while you grieve.
Even in biblical times, when we consider lepers, this banished, forgotten, dying group, that in our culture, we do that so with the AIDS people. We keep them away because we don't want to know what it really means to face death.
Where do you stick these people? Where do you want to stick these people?
I can, you know, remember the first time that someone spoke to me that they were HIV positive. I swear I felt my soul fly across the room in fear, and I had to talk to myself. I had to say, you know, you're not going to catch something from this person who's sitting right beside you. And I seriously had to, like, reel my soul in.
You can't take a shot and fix it.
You can't cut it out. There's no way you can get around it being in your blood.
And then the fact of mutates makes it monstrous that something slips past all your defenses.
Earlier, the thoughts of death were very abstract, things like nuclear war.
I haven't seen anyone who got killed by the atom bomb. And I've seen that virus hit, strike, and kill. And I know that I'm a possible target.
I hope that I will see the men in my life that are gay in their 20s, 50, with gray hair and large tummies.
There are people out there who are very smug and happy about the fact that homosexuals are dying.
That sexual preference is not the disease's preference. So the channels in which it immediately moved into this country are not the channels in which it is primarily moving now.
Everywhere else in the world, this is a heterosexually transmitted disease.
We have no perception whatsoever what it's like to be a Zaire citizen and every third person being infected.
The fear of the plague was that it would attack everyone from fool to pope. The skeletal messenger comes to everybody, one by one.
We don't get much in school.
No.
About the actual disease. And I mean, I can see now that 6-7 years ago, kids in high school didn't learn anything about it. And that's where these rumors came about. You know, it's only gays, and that's why we need to educate people so that this thing is gone.
It could be a bringing together of worlds if we know that really we aren't protected. There's no way.
There is no day without art, because you can remove the painting or shroud it, and then of course the shroud is finely woven. You can shut your eyes, but then you'd have to plug up your ears, and then you'd have memory, and then you'd have to have amnesia, but then you might have a dream.
How do we stop as a culture being so fascinated with sensation and indulgence? Well, there are the dancing skeletons doing this jig on our appetite.
I don't know what's going to make us use protection and be cautious. I think when the world's still in motion, you don't have to think about AIDS is killing and other diseases are killing, but when everything seems to stop for a day, you have to think about what everything's coming to and where we're pushing ourselves.
It's like people go in there expecting to see some art, and there's nothing. And when there's nothing, you know, people want to talk, and that's what this whole thing's about. It's a day without art, and, you know, they're going to talk about why.
Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Hebrews 11, 1.
When I first found out that I was HIV positive, all my dreams and my hope was shattered. I was worried about what was going to become of me, my children. How am I going to tell my mother? The best way is if I kill myself.
The news comes like a stone falling. Suddenly all light is gone. Outside the heat is black as loss. Tomorrow is a burden. I speak the words into the air. No one answers. The sky is a dull plate of silences. Tomorrow is a heavy load. My feet move sluggishly, every sound muted to a drone. It is hard to dream these days. And oh, the tears, the tears.
I didn't really know the difference between HIV and AIDS. I just know that I went over to the clinic and I tested positive for AIDS, and I'm going to die now. I asked myself, why me? Why do I have to be positive?
This treachery of the blood is a secret rushing through me, and my face is a mask no one must read beyond its inscrutable dumbness. No one must know. I cannot read the faces around me. Everyone seems filled with hope. How ordinary life must be for them.
What secrets do they carry in this city of dust, exhaust, and the clamor of engines? There is no substance in the things I dream of these days. The news came like a stone falling, and I can't find my way back to peace. This is the antithesis of hope, the calculus of sudden and terrible news.
This dreadful disease. A mother is supposed to be there for their children. What is going to become of them now that I'm HIV positive?
My name is Kwame Dawes. I'm a poet and a writer. I was born in Ghana and grew up in Jamaica. There are two Jamaicas. There's the Jamaica that the tourists know, that many Americans know. That's the Jamaica of the North Coast, of the beaches, the waterfalls, the all-inclusive hotels, the partying. But there's a second Jamaica. That is the Jamaica on the South Coast. It's the Jamaica of Kingston. It is the Jamaica in which people live day to day, eking out a living. It's a Jamaica that knows wealth. It also knows poverty. It knows violence. But it also has a brash, smart energy. It is where the music is created in Jamaica. And it is in this Jamaica that I've returned to explore the issue of HIV/AIDS.
Well, in Jamaica, we have a population of approximately 2.6 million people. And we estimate approximately 25,000 persons living with HIV. And maybe a bit over a half of them are not aware that they're living with HIV.
I think particularly because Jamaica is such a Christian society and we believe in Bible and punishment and what have you, sex and sin and death, it's all tied up. You know, if you have sex, you're going to die. And now AIDS has just come to confirm that. It's that link between sex and death that I think feeds into that brimstone and fire psyche that many of us have. However, deeply hidden, you know, it kind of feeds into that. It's a punishment.
Based on our history and our culture, sex begins at an early age. Multiple sexual partnerships are not unusual.
The popular perception by some groups outside of Jamaica is that Jamaica is known to be a homophobic environment. And that has come largely through a reaction to some of the songs by the DJs. This is the dancehall DJs, who in some of their lyrics have really kind of virulent and violent statements about homosexuals and what should be done to homosexuals, and none of it is good. And it's almost in the dancehall scene expected you have to do your anti-homosexual song as a kind of rite of passage or as a necessary thing. And they're hugely popular in the dancehall.
They're always saying that it's the dirty ones or the careless ones, the ones that live their life reckless. They're always saying that it's gay person get it. And I know that I wasn't gay, so how did I get it? And then I start querying, is my child father gay? It could not be, because he has been in relationship with female that I know about.
No, no, no. You don't love me, and I know
that. There's no question that this weird contradiction exists, that there is a lively gay community in Jamaica. So that's one side of the things that fascinated me about trying to understand what is happening there and trying to communicate to people that it's more nuanced than just saying this is an island where people are just homophobic for, you know, just for the sake of it.
When you talked to people, for them, okay, maybe it's not a gay disease anymore. We've kind of gotten over it. Kind of, if you're a man and have it, there still become questions about your sexuality. But we know it's not just gays who have it. But many people still have the underlying belief, no matter how much information you give them, that it's certain kinds of people, you know, you have to be wild and crazy in your sexual behaviors, or at least have multiple partners. And few people accept that multiple means more than one.
60 to 70% of the new contractions of HIV/AIDS are with women, which has been true in sub-Saharan Africa. It's been true in places like South Carolina. It's been true in other parts of the Caribbean. It's very much now becoming a disease for women who are heterosexual.
They're not using a condom. They don't like it. It itch. They're allergic. Baby, I just want to feel the real you. I mean, natural. You guys will get these lines. Mom, but that's not sex, you know? It's artificial sex. Let's have real sex. Skin to skin. And girls will believe this. And they'll have unprotected sex with them simply because they fear losing them.
I knew something of Anisha's story before I met Anisha. And what I knew of her story was that she was the poster child for HIV/AIDS in Jamaica and for surviving it and for living with HIV/AIDS in Jamaica. Well, that puzzled me, and it made me think, what would make a girl or a woman in Jamaica in 2007 take the chance of going up front and admitting to the whole world that she's HIV positive? I knew initially that there must have been an element of bravery there.
I knew that I was in one faithful relationship with my child's father. I wasn't a girl that was running around. And I knew that he was the one who gave it to me.
And she was first diagnosed with HIV, having discovered that she was HIV positive from somebody who was at the funeral of her then living boyfriend, a man who was about 47 years old when he died. And he had been murdered. And the rumor was that he had been murdered because he had given HIV to the sister of the man who actually killed him. And this was a revenge killing.
My child's father was killed. It's some person says that he was killed because he infected someone and their family decided to retaliate. But it's only he and that person can know the real truth of what happened. I never really query into it much. I just know that I have this thing and my whole life and all my dreams have been shattered. No, I have to make a right about change. I have to turn around my life.
Anisha's story I found to be a series of ups and downs, moments when you thought things could change in this inexorable march towards tragedy that often affects poor people who live in Jamaica. At one moment, she grows up abused, sexually abused from age 7 until she's about 11 or 12 by her stepfather. And then she's rescued from that and taken to Ghana, West Africa, where it looks like she's going to do something fantastic with her life. She goes to Achimota School, the most prestigious high school in Ghana. And then she comes back to Jamaica and falls into a relationship with a man who is 3 times her age, and he gives her HIV. And then through that journey through HIV, she comes back into this world where she's a well-known person. Her face is on billboards, and she has a message to give. You say you love dance and things.
Yeah.
You still go dancing?
Sometimes my mother or my uncle, they will say, "Dad, I don't want to you." But I tell them that there is going to be a time when I won't be able to dance anymore. And I would dance.
Beanie man in a white fedora, his legs all legs as he steps like a king across the stage. Head held back, fist to mouth, scattershot lyrics, gruff as any bedroom bully. And a girl can forget her worries, can blank out the belly's groaning, can feel like a girl child again, not no baby mother thrice over with no answers for tomorrow. Can silence the whisper of the disease in her blood, hold down her waistline and dance away the gloom. Lord, dance inside the boom of the sound system. Dance with this long, MAGA black man in his white tux commanding all and sundry to grind your waistline. And what else to do but dance, baby?
sweat it out, find back the sweet spot in the waistline where it is watery and gummy, feel clean again, feel fresh again, feel rude again, while the city shimmers with its million souls trying to make all sorrow fade away, sweet Lord.
That was part of Live, Hope, Love, HIV/AIDS in Jamaica with poet Kwame Dawes. It was produced by Stephanie Geyer-Stevens and Jack Chance of OuterVoices.org for the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting. Their Emmy-winning website is livehopelove.com. Support came from the Mac AIDS Fund of Mac Cosmetics and from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. This music is by Augustus Pablo. You are hearing Voices from NPR with AIDS Diaries. Barbara Bryan of Seattle unknowingly passed the virus to her daughter, Dory, in the womb. Joe Plotz interviewed them for the Vernacular Project.
I've always been interested in learning. I mean, I wanted to learn everything there was about this virus that was in me. I would ask questions a lot, particularly to my mom. I don't know if my mother knows it, but I have learned quite a bit. She has taught me to be courageous, to fight back if need be. Not with my fists, but with my mind, and maybe with my voice. I was in the hospital one time because I was extremely sick with cryptococcal meningitis. Extremely ill. It gives you a horrible, horrible headache, and it never goes away. And the only way you can get rid of it is if they give you spinal taps to release the pressure. And it's a fungus on the brain, basically. And on your spinal cord in the back right here. And, oh, it's painful. I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't look at anybody. Even my closest friends I didn't talk to or look at. I didn't say anything. I didn't eat. I didn't drink. I didn't talk. I didn't cry. I was numb totally from head to toe, inside and out. You know, and my mother, she was the one who rescued me. To me, to this very day, my mother is my number one heroine. She has pulled me out of the gutter so many times.
Dory, this is going to make me cry.
My mother had to shake me. She literally made me cuss and swear, you know, just to shake something up, to make me feel something. Because at the time, I wasn't feeling anything.
When Dory gets sick, and she gets so far close to the edge, she just loses, her wasting begins. You know, she doesn't eat. She has dreams and visions about seeing my mom and angels, and I see angels, and, you know, we're in the spirit all the time, and we're praying, and we're lifting, and we're like, We're living on two dimensions at once, in the physical and the spiritual. And that's where we are at. And people are sucked into that energy. And so they go along with us on that journey. And then she gets better because something happens. So at one moment we're talking about death, praying, and asking for a miracle. Like the last time she had a seizure, she was down to 74 pounds, having seizures regularly. This was like 3 months ago. Not eating, wanting to go to God, and I'm ready to send her off. Okay, you know, she falls down in her room, we hear the clunk, go upstairs, and I'm just holding her, and she pees on herself while she's having the seizure, and for 10 minutes she's seizing, and I can't cry, because if she is floating in the spirit, I don't want her to see me crying, so I just keep praying, and that's so hard, to see your child suffer from something you gave them.
Children that have been affected by this epidemic, their parents die at a young age. They don't even know sometimes what their parents stood for, what their parents would have wanted them to do at their wedding, what their parents' parents were like. All those things are recorded in a memory book. And I'll tell you, I've seen these memory books, and those children got them with their lives.
And a memory book was just any old like exercise book, whatever people wanted, they picked up. And typically HIV-positive mothers began entering information as a kind of journal into this book. They would also store these books in boxes. Could be a basket or a childhood suitcase or some family trunk, whatever they wanted.
So this is one of them. This is a bright yellow box with red AIDS ribbons painted on the sides. And inside the box are little matchboxes hanging from red strings. Each one of the matchboxes has got a different title on it. It's friend, time, life, soul, and victim. One of them says condom, open it. So
I'm condom, forget HIV AIDS, advertise and market me more, don't forget to make me useful.
Okay, this one is quite an unusual box made by an artist, so it's quite different.
She really engaged with a whole lot of HIV AIDS information in the form of pamphlets that were lying around in the workshop. It's a very psychedelic box, lots of colors, with lots of amazing information about like viral load and HIV attacks your immune cells and T4 cells and CD4 cells. And this box is actually, it's a bit of a resource in itself. Someone could read it and learn a lot about HIV and AIDS. Okay, this one is interesting. It was made in Guguletu by the group. It has a picture of people running down the street in New York. And, you know, it's a different kind of a fear. It's a different kind of disaster, but certainly it's quite interesting to juxtapose it to the huge pandemic, which in some ways doesn't get the same kind of media attention. We go to townships every day and see people really dying, and the world doesn't seem to care. Sometimes when people hear about memory boxes, it sounds like a little bit morbid. It's like HIV equals AIDS equals death, and you know, get down your story before you die so you can leave a legacy for your children. But, you know, it's really an opportunity to get in touch with whatever story you want to through this book. And that might be how to live positively with a virus.
Well, you can do it as a celebration of life.
Sure, and inside it you could put an audio cassette of your own voice, or you could sing a song, incorporate children's drawings and children's handprints, and you could have your favorite smells and textures, and there's hardly anything that can't go into a memory box.
AIDS workers Jonathan Morgan and Kylie Thomas with Abiola Tili Chiado from Plan International. Recorded by Bush Radio of South Africa and produced by Sandra Ratley for the Africa Learning Channel. At the beginning of this hour, we heard Tembe Ngubane's AIDS diary. Tembe died June 2009. Radio Diary's Joe Richman has this memorial.
When I first met Tembe, she was 19. She was living in a shack and she was HIV positive. I suppose the odds were stacked against her, but it didn't seem that way at the time. Tembe thought the virus should be scared of her, rather than the other way around. And one of the first things she recorded for her diary was what she called her HIV prayer.
Hello HIV, you trespasser. You are in my body. You have to obey the rules. You have to respect me. And if you don't hurt me, I won't hurt you. You mind your business, I'll mind mine. Then I'll give you your ticket when your time comes.
Over the course of a year, Tembe recorded about 50 hours of tape. Interviews with her family and friends, late night dancing with her boyfriend, Malakaya, the sounds of her baby and Wabo, and the moment when she told her father that she had AIDS. But the most amazing part of Tembe's story was what happened after her diary aired. Tembe traveled to the United States in 2006 to present her story in high schools and colleges. She met Bill Clinton and then Senator Barack Obama. Yet what Tembe was most proud of was slowly finding the courage to speak out in her own country. At the time, very few people in South Africa were talking openly about their HIV status. In March 2007, she addressed the South African Parliament.
Every time I went to the clinic, someone is dying because all these people have lack of knowledge. All these people don't believe that AIDS exists. That's why people must stop discriminating, because it's not going to go away. It's up to us to do something about it.
Tembe was under 5 feet tall, but she was a big presence. brave, open, and funny, with a really charming smile. It was sometimes difficult to remember that she was sick. This week, Tembi was diagnosed with drug-resistant TB. She died last night. She was 24.
I'm just imagining what this world would be like without me. I'm not scared of dying, but I'm scared of not being here.
Mourners at Tembe's funeral. Her story is online at AIDSdiary.org. I'm Barrett Golding of HearingVoices.com.
Supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of SoundImagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is HearingVoices.com.